now plugged in to the Delphi podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Delphi podcast. I'm Tom Shaughnessy, and I help lead Delphi Ventures, as well as host some of the most in-the-weeds and thought-provoking guests across crypto, spanning Layer 1s to DeFi, NFTs, and beyond. The goal is to have fun, but also to dive deep and offer foundational episodes on projects and founders. Also, check out our research on Delphi Digital or miss out on the most compelling research there is. It's up to you. As a reminder, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. Delphi Ventures may hold tokens mentioned, so check out our transparency page in the show notes for more info. With that, let's dive in. See you guys on the other side.
GM Delphi fam, and welcome back to the Delphi podcast. This is Avi from Delphi Ventures. Today we have another episode as part of our Delphi Web3 series. Our guest, Danny Zuckerman, is co-founder of 3Box Labs. 3Box Labs has been working on building out the Ceramic Network, an ecosystem for decentralized data storage and management. In this conversation, we cover what is decentralized data, how does Ceramic enable data composability, what does the future of data interoperability look like, which projects built on Ceramic you should keep an eye on, and why the Dataverse is the new metaverse. Without further ado, here's Danny. Hey, Danny, how you doing, man?
Awesome.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm really excited to dig into Ceramic and you know, learn a bit more about what you guys are building over there. But before we do, please intro yourself to our Delphi listeners.
Sure. I'm Danny Zuckerman, one of the founders of 3Box Labs, and we're the creators of Ceramic Network. We've been working on basically making it easy for developers to use decentralized identity data for 4.5 years now. And so that has taken us a bunch of different ways to get to Ceramic, which we're super excited about and is growing pretty rapidly now.
Nice. And 4.5 years is like, that's a decent amount of time, like especially in crypto terms, relatively speaking. I'm curious, like, what was your moment or red-pilled moment into crypto and like blockchain technology?
Yeah, so what hooked me about the crypto and decentralized tech space is I've always viewed it as the best coordination tools we've ever had. So it was like 2016. I had taken a break from building products at my last job and was traveling and reading a ton and digging into all sorts of things and decided to like finally understand like what this blockchain thing is. And so just did a ton of reading. And there was no one thing that did it. But as I learned more about the tech, read pieces from Chris Dixon and Joel Monegro and met a bunch of people working on it, it really did crystallize as like, oh, we could, you know, we spend so much of our time and our lives online today. Like that really is our digital society. But that whole society is shaped by like really, really inefficient coordination mechanisms and a few people in control. And so this way to gather and collaborate and coordinate much more scalably, effectively, fairly, fluidly. That's what hooked me. And so started to look at kind of different holes in the space where I might plug in. And you know, there was even in 2016, like a very evident gap to be able to work, to kind of use and build on the data side of applications and things that we do online as opposed to the value side. And so that's what got me in. Originally at Uport, which was like a really early pioneer in decentralized identity in Ethereum and crypto generally. That's where I met Michael and Joel, my two co-founders at 3Box.
Nice. And so tell me a little bit more about like distributed data and storage. Like what does that actually mean? Like what's happening on the back end there?
Yeah, so maybe let's just like talk about the whole data stack and like why it matters and what's been missing that kind of led us to this.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you go online to any application, you know, today, and it's kind of running on a few different things. It's running on code, it's running on data, like all of the information that populates the websites that you see, whether it's your user data or application data. And then there's some value mechanisms to kind of create business models around it. And so like a huge portion of any application or product or service online today is the data that drives it. Think about the Web3 stack and the dApps and apps in the space that we've seen to date. They've really been missing like all of those data-driven features. They've really been about value programs, storing and tracking assets and contracts of various kinds. And that's what blockchains are really good at. If you think about the data side, we've had really good storage layer solutions, Arweave and Filecoin and IPFS. But what we've been missing is the kind of mutability and state transformation and structure on top of it that in Web2 a database would provide. So not just the raw disk space, but the ability to process and use data in high volumes, very, very fast and in really rich ways. And that's why we haven't had social networks and user-generated content or even like rich profiles and reputation in Web3, because we didn't have the equivalent of the database layer in the stack. And so that's what we've needed to be able to like take Web3 apps to like a really rich and exciting place. So it's a little bit of an overview of why we built Ceramic.
Nice. And I pulled up here this diagram of the Web3 application stack. And maybe just for, like, for reference, like what is being used today on this like this side of the equation? Like how are actually Web3 applications built and managing their data?
Yeah. So I'd say the most common, there's kind of three ways. The most common is they just haven't been. Like that's why you see so many Web3 applications that instead of a profile have a hex address, and like ENS is taking care of that in some ways for like really, really basic profile information or names. But like we don't have those data-driven features like rich commenting and discussion and user-generated content because, you know, we haven't had the tech. Those who do really want those features mostly just use a server. So even decentralized applications or those building for that market have had to rely on a traditional database for some of these richer, higher volume data features. Which is problematic for a whole bunch of reasons beyond just the decentralization ethos. Or those who have been like really committed to decentralization have put content on IPFS and then tracked hashes as the content gets updated, either in a database, which brings you back to the same place, or a smart contract. And that just doesn't scale. It ends up costing you, if you're doing it on Ethereum, you know, tens of dollars when you want to update your profile name or make a comment or something. And even with L2s or more scalable L1s, that type of like tracking state changes in a value blockchain will never scale for the kind of throughput you need for data features. So that's, again, why most people have chosen just not to build those data features and focus on the smart contract layer.
Yeah. And so this is a great, I think this is a great segue into like Ceramic. And what is Ceramic exactly? I think, and we've spoken a few times now, and a lot of people are kind of get it, including myself. But there's, you know, maybe a little bit of, ambiguity around it. There's this mystery around it. It could be that huge confusion in the market. Yeah. So coming from the man himself, what is Ceramic? What is it doing?
Yeah. So Ceramic makes it really easy to build with decentralized data by providing this layer on top of IPFS for managing state transformations and keeping track of that, and then associating the data to data structures that make it like really easy to consume and read and build an application around, and then saving and storing that data with a user. And so that really boils down to like it's a solution for user-centric data, which has been a huge part of the Web3 vision for a very long time. You know, user comes to an application and they do a bunch of things and a bunch of data gets generated, and like where does it go? And instead of putting it directly on IPFS, where now you have this like challenge of like, tracking it over time, and when the user comes back, how do you associate it? With Ceramic, it all just gets saved with the user, associated to the key and the identity that they're bringing with them, with any blockchain wallet. And so as a developer, now you have this kind of bundled solution in the form of a protocol and shared database to kind of structure your data for whatever you need, for whatever feature you want. We have this concept of data model. So developers write the data model that corresponds to the features they want. And then every time a user comes to their app, they get records in Ceramic on top of IPFS that correspond to those data models. And when they go to another app, they can bring it with them. When they come back to the original app, it's still there. And so you have this ability to build fully decentralized applications with really rich data features that you as a developer decide, you know, how it looks and how it's structured. And it's all stored with the user, so you're giving them control. And you have this composability across applications, the ability to take app, you know, data with you the way that you can assets on a blockchain. And so what enables that, though, is this mutability on top of IPFS, which is static files. And Ceramic provides a way to kind of keep track of content as it changes in a verifiable way.
That's awesome. And just to try and repeat back what I just heard, you know, IPFS is good for static data, right? Ceramic is now this framework to create mutable data tables that are tied to a user.
Yeah, exactly right.
And so now that's really fucking cool. Like what are some of the things that like you're excited for now? Like okay, now that we have this, what does that mean? Like what are these data rich features that I can now build as a developer on a completely distributed, you know, data storage network that I wouldn't have been able to do before in a completely Web3 manner?
Yeah. So let's talk about like two use cases, and there's like a very long tail because it's similar to a database, right? Like a database can do anything that a developer can dream up, really. It's just a matter of configuring it. But the first one that's, you know, getting tons of usage is like identity and reputation. Again, a core part of the Web3 vision for a very long time is give users much more control to bring their identity with them from application to application and start to accumulate a really rich reputation around them instead of it being fragmented in lots of different apps and platforms. And so there's a bunch of different forms this is taking. DAOHouse just today, it's February 4th, launched like a really rich profile for DAO members that uses Ceramic, because now you can start to attach all this information, again, across accounts and wallets and even blockchains to a single user and let them aggregate all this information and take that with them. But beyond just like profiles, Rabbit Hole, which does like user onboarding for Web3, is having users accumulate skills for different quests that they complete. Those credentials for those skills need to be stored somewhere. Now they can store them in Ceramic so that they're associated directly to a user, and a user can, again, take them with them across blockchains, across accounts, and accumulate this basically on-chain resume. And so starting to attach all of this like really rich data beyond just the on-chain transactions. But what's really exciting is like there's a group called Metacred that is a whole bunch of people that need reputation and skills credentials in various ways. And they have come together to start to collaborate on what is the data model or the set of data models that we should all use to create this information and store with users, such that it's now not just for any one application, but this data gets used across the ecosystem. And so being able to build this really rich reputation for social applications, for governance, Boardroom was one of the first to use Ceramic for letting people in different DAOs ideate and discuss governance proposals and start to have some reputation associated to it. And so this reputation unlocks like huge social features and governance, along with like it's kind of the same primitive for credit for DeFi applications as people move towards under-collateralized loans. And so basically being able to build up this identity and reputation is a really big first use case for Ceramic. I have a kind of another one I talk about around social, but I'll pause there. Does that all make sense?
Yeah. And so I pulled up here the awesome Ceramic list of projects that you guys have in your site. I'm not sure how up to date this is, but a lot of these are kind of like social oriented, credential systems or social graphs. Is that what you're seeing? Like, is that what you expected as like the primary use case for Ceramic, or is there something else that you had in mind?
Yeah. So again, like identity reputation was the first, but social really is the second. You're right. And I'd say that's come on even faster than we expected. So that takes a few different forms. One that may not be on there yet, but that's super exciting and they're doing incredible work is CyberConnect, which is basically built along with an application, kind of a social graph protocol on top of Ceramic, and really easy kind of structuring and indexing for it so that anybody across Web3 can build on the same social graph. So no matter what application you're going to, you still have the same follower friends list and you're not recreating that everywhere. Yeah, exactly. And so they've gotten tons of adoption, I think, especially in China. And so like creating this, you know, network effects are really what give some of the Web2 platforms so much power and leverage and lock-in, and shared network effects in the form of like social graphs or other networks are a huge part of what's going to make Web3 successful. And so, yeah, CyberConnect has started to put this into place already. But beyond just the social graph, there's another project called Orbis, Orbis.club, that basically cloned Twitter in a matter of a couple of weeks, building on decentralized data, mostly Ceramic. And being able to create these communities and conversations and a feed of content in a fully decentralized way means now anybody else can go create another interface for the same content and have a much more powerful experience. And so, yeah, if anybody hasn't checked out Orbis, I would definitely encourage it. He's, I think it's a team of one still, although I don't believe that because they're making so much progress so fast. I think that Orbis and CyberConnect are now talking about like sharing the same data model. So your connections on one actually come with you to the other. Again, this composability of data across Web3 is such a powerful part of this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's what has us really excited at like Delphi Digital, the composability of that data and like what that means. And from a developer's perspective, it's almost a no-brainer. It's like, why wouldn't you build on top of these existing, you know, data structures and you know, databases, or, you know, thinking of something like CyberConnect and the social graph.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I love how you put that. Already we've seen people in like week-long hackathons build pretty sophisticated Notion clones, because with decentralized data, you can get going so much faster. And that's even without a huge ecosystem that we're now starting to see built up of other developers who have published data models for profiles or for a social graph or for whatever else, which you think about the future developer experience, you kind of show up to this data ecosystem and you just like pick and choose different data models to compose your app the way that you like NPM install today for different libraries and features. And so creating this like open source data ecosystem makes it so much easier to build cool things way faster and way more powerfully. And that's what we're super excited about.
I'm excited to see what developers, you know, how they run with this tool. I'm curious though, on the user end of things, sometimes it's not as, you know, explicit what these benefits are. Could you maybe like walk me through how, you know, something like, you know, data composability and you know, composable data structures ends up manifesting in like a better end user experience?
Yeah. So there's things that are directly part of the experience and things that are a little bit more subtle. I think that the users are going to get it when they start going to applications. And all of a sudden, the applications are delivering like incredible user experiences powered by all the data that they've had elsewhere, without them having to like go through a whole bunch of authentication screens to connect to an API. Just going to show up at an app and it's going to have all of your preferences and the fact that you already like dark mode and your whole contact list. And you're going to know that that's not like a creepy Meta or Facebook in behind the scenes snooping on you. You're going to know that that app has it just because you brought all your data with you and they were able to use it and deliver like this like holy shit moment and experience. Similar to how a lot of us like it didn't do that much when we heard people describe the power of like DeFi Legos, but when we went from Zerion to Zapperfi and saw all the same stuff just in a different interface and with some different tooling, it kind of clicked like, oh, you can do so much more now. I think it's going to be similar, but for a huge number of other use cases, bringing your conversations across these different applications. Or I choose to use Notion, you choose to use Evernote, but we can still collaborate on the same underlying document, but we like different, you know, products. So that's like the real UX benefit that users get. And then they also get to know that they have control over all of their data. There's no lock-in, there's no abuse of their data, which we know that most users aren't willing to take a ton of action against that today, but more and more the sentiment against that is huge. And the real hidden cost of that is when apps have all of your data locked in, you can't adopt new products or services nearly as readily. You have to wait till like there's a huge reason to migrate everything over. And so with composable data, users get to know that any time if another better product comes out, better service comes out, or a complementary one, it's super easy to just go start using that. And so the real user experience benefit is how we use the web as a whole, not how we use any one application.
Yeah, man, if I could just auto default to dark mode on every site, that'd be huge.
It was a community member who brought up that example, and it's such a basic one, but it's like so true. Why do you have to toggle that on everywhere you go? Like that should just come with you.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I'm excited for that one. On that sort of like data user ownership piece, I think it's right now it's like a black box. Like people, you know, they, you know, there's an agreement when you sign up for like an application to like allow an application to use your data, but users never actually own it. So I think that's like maybe the fundamental difference here. And maybe you could just elaborate on that piece a bit more. Like, how is it that Ceramic is actually enabling users to like truly own their data?
Yeah. So technically, within Ceramic, we have these pieces of data called streams. And streams are these IPLD DAGs, so these mutable data structures on top of IPFS. What that basically means is it's a piece of data that can change over time as someone or some party writes updates to it. Every stream has what's called a controller, which you can think of as the owner of that stream, which is basically the key that's allowed to make updates to that piece of data. And that controller in Ceramic most of the time is a user's DID, which is called a decentralized identifier, which basically maps to a bunch of different blockchain accounts. And so as a user, you're actually like signing every piece of data, every change that's made or every new piece of data that's written to Ceramic is being signed by your key, either directly or indirectly. And that stream cannot be updated by anyone else, by any other application or user. It's written into the code of the stream. That gives, first of all, it gives kind of verifiability over the authenticity and provenance of the data for anybody and any application. But any of those streams can be encrypted or access controlled in different ways. And it's the controller who gets to decide who gets to read or decrypt it. These streams are being stored on a decentralized network that anybody can run a node for. And so there's no one party that decides to keep pinning the data or hosting it. It's being purchased by anybody who wants to, as with other decentralized networks. So what this means as a user is you are directly writing the data onto the network, unlike in a traditional database where like maybe you do something, but it's actually like the application that's writing the data on your behalf. So you're directly writing the data with your cryptographic signature onto it. And you're the only one who has the permission to update it, share it, change it, or give others permission to access it in different ways. Similar to value and smart contracts on a blockchain and signing transactions with your blockchain wallet to send crypto, you're directly controlling this crypto data on Ceramic in a way that cryptographically and provably only the controller or the user of it is allowed to.
Could I keep any of that data private? And I'm thinking, if I'm a user and I'm storing it on this public network, well, anybody can see it. So, why is that, say any better than, the applications who are holding it to themselves? Cause right, they could just, Facebook, if they wanted to, could come to Ceramic and just, pull all of my user data. How do I like end up being able to control it ultimately?
Yeah.
How do I like know and make sure that it's mine?
Yeah. So I think there's two different pieces. There's the privacy and then there's the like control or like almost power over the data. So privacy, and they're very interlaced, but we can actually tease them apart. So the privacy story on Ceramic is basically some data can be public. That data is available for anybody to see. Your public profile, if you want people to be able to discover a little bit of information about you. Most people have a LinkedIn profile. They don't mind that anybody on the web can go search for their LinkedIn profile and find it. So there is information that people are fine with having public. It's all your decision to put it there. Then there's encrypted data on Ceramic. So this is data that is still on a public network, but it's encrypted and only the controller, the user, can decide to let others decrypt it and see it. And so that's great for things where you want some level of privacy and control over. But like it's still a public network and encryption may be broken at some point and someone could be downloading the whole public network and waiting till the day that they can break all that encryption. So like we wouldn't recommend you put your social security number or your like genetic sequence on Ceramic ever, even encrypted. But what you can do is you could store a bunch of data that you want much more like secure privacy guarantees around. Like those, that shouldn't go on a public network. That should go onto a server with very strict access control rules. But you could index it or like, put the fact that it's on a server at an endpoint somewhere with the schema of what's there on Ceramic attached to your identity in what's called a DID data store. This is like the user-centric user table that you mentioned before where it lets kind of any app discover what data a user has and then go route to it. That routing can point to databases that are just servers somewhere. So you get the benefits of this user-centric discovery and composability and control without actually putting all the data on Ceramic. And so that's kind of like the degrees of privacy using Ceramic. But in terms of like even for the public discoverable data, what's so different than the story in Web 2 is everybody's on a level playing field. So like your data might be public or encrypted, but as a user, you can always take it with you. You always have the option to like opt out and go somewhere else. And as apps, you're always kind of building on this shared data infrastructure, which is very different than, again, like Facebook having a massive amount of data about everyone that gives it this massive advantage where no one can kind of opt out of the network effects because they're so powerful and competition can't innovate and compete on product or service alone because they're competing against this huge advantage Facebook has. It's partly a privacy story, but it's also a leveling the playing field to unleash a lot more permissionless innovation on the data that we should all be sharing access to.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's there's a very hyped narrative that we've seen at least on the Delphi Ventures side of things around the metaverse and interoperability in the metaverse and what does that mean? And of course, I don't even want to call it Meta, but the company formerly known as Facebook making that move into the metaverse and owning this full stack of user data is kind of terrifying. I've got my Oculus here that I love and adore playing, but I also want the best game developers to be able to produce these like incredible experiences, and I want to be able to bring my data from place to place. So I'm really excited to see how Ceramic plays into that. Now, that being said, right, we're blowing. Ceramic is, kind of blowing up the data business model of Web 2, right? What is what do you think that like next generation of, you know, say social, you know, Web3 social business model looks like? How do these companies end up making money if they aren't able to, say, you know, capture value in their users' data?
So I think it's much more diversified business models that align the incentives of early app developers and more mature businesses and users together much better. So first of all, there are ways that certain data on Ceramic could actually turn into revenue streams. So Ceramic will eventually have a blockchain. There will be a native token that is used for a number of different things in the Ceramic ecosystem. One of them is to create and curate the data models that I mentioned earlier. Data models being these kind of defined schema and structures for data, for a social graph or for blog posts or for a composition of these, you know, other data models. And by having a marketplace around staking on them, apps can signal like this is the one we want to use, and you have this really powerful like consensus on data and what to use it, which really increases the interoperability of data on the network, which makes all the data and the information much more valuable and consumable, good for everybody. And the apps and developers and users who are helping to create those data models, signal on them, or create the data that kind of forms these data collections in these data models that get consumed could be rewarded by the token. And so there could be really powerful revenue models on top of Ceramic for creating data, sharing data, signaling on data. But I think that, so that's kind of like the closest analog, which I think is much more, again, incentive aligned, but that's the closest analog to like monetizing data that we have in Web2. I think that the really exciting thing about having all this data and other infrastructure in the decentralized space, of course, including blockchain, is the startup cost of building a really powerful application falls so much because you're able to skip past so many of the cold start problems and the initial hurdles of getting an application into users' hands. The most obvious one is, you know, most early applications have massive fall off during onboarding, especially if they're social, because you show up to an app early, none of your friends are there, or there's don't have any data about you. They can't deliver a very powerful experience compared to something that you've been using for a long time and all of your friends are there. Every app can share your friends list and all this data about you because you can bring it from app to app. It's way faster, cheaper, and lighter weight for people to build businesses online, to build apps, products, and services. And we're seeing the return of just like people are willing to pay for applications again. A couple years ago, I didn't pay for any software on a monthly basis. Now I pay for all sorts of things. And so I think we're kind of moving from a model where every piece of software needs to go for being a unicorn and capturing all this data about users and tries to be huge to a much more rich ecosystem of diverse apps and services that all interoperate and play together really well. And so they might not be as big, but lots of profitable ones that together are way more powerful than anything we have today.
That's cool. I haven't thought about that one before, but yeah, I too am much more willing to spend money on a software product. I'm curious, in the same kind of train of thought around like the financialization of data, you know, a lot of people, or I've heard, you know, in Web3, people will own their data so they can sell their data and people will be able to make money from their data. What's your take on that?
I don't disagree that it's possible or that it will even happen. Like it might. I think that's such a small part of the value that we'll see once users are in control of their data. So that's not something that we're focused on at all. You know, there's different studies and research and calculations about how much your data is worth. Some say it's worth a decent amount. Others say actually individually your data is not worth all that much. It needs to be pooled. There's ways to pool it, and that can happen. But if you think about a world in which all this data is with users and people are able to bring it from app to app, data has gone from scarce to abundant. Like Facebook can make so much money off of users' data because they're the only ones that have it, or one of very few. And so they can charge advertisers a ton of money to be able to target ads really well because they have that unique resource of tons of data. In a world in which there's this massive ecosystem of data where you just get to bring it with them wherever they want and choose to let lots of people have it, data is much more abundant. And so in some ways, the value actually falls. It means people are making a ton of money off of you. But the real value you get as a user is, again, like apps and products and services can deliver way more value to you way more cheaply. And sometimes that might take a financial form. You can get a huge discount on your life insurance premium if you connect your Fitbit to your life insurance provider, because now they can see that you're healthy and you're working out, and your premiums can go down if they can verify that. That's worth it because it's thousands of dollars, and so people will like jump through hoops to create this like custom integration. But imagine if everything works like that at like just signing a message in your wallet and giving access, and now you get a huge discount because people can verify that you're, you know, you have a high reputation or that you're a really good customer or whatever it is. And so you can get lots of discounts or lots of value added features or just a better experience for less. And so for us, the value is much less explicit. Sell your data to the highest bidder. It's much more about get more value out of this information that should be a shared resource.
Nice. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so we've chatted a bunch about like data and like Web3 data and decentralized data. I kind of want to now zoom out a bit. And, you know, this is part of the Delphi Web3 series. And so I want to ask you, like, what is Web3?
So I think Web3 is the internet in which all of the apps and products and services you use across all of your different devices with all of your different accounts share underlying data, whether that's financial data on a blockchain or user data or application data. And one thing that's really interesting that we talked about on our team is, in a lot of ways, the vision for the metaverse and the vision for Web3 have like merged recently. The metaverse comes at it from kind of an interface angle, like VR, of course, but also like, I think metaverse, everybody understands to be more than just VR now. It's really about the omni-channel, access anything, devices connected, and kind of living in this digital world that's not just web pages on a laptop. And Web3 is a vision of that in which Meta, the company, is not in control of it, or Google or Amazon is not in control of it, but rather it's a rich ecosystem of sites that all interoperate and work together and are powerful through their diversity and through their composability. But the metaverse has to run on some underlying infrastructure. Among that is what we started calling the dataverse. And that dataverse needs to be shared by all of us. The Web3 that we're excited about is this one of just billions of flowers booming, people creating apps and services constantly that just plug into this ecosystem, which is how the web started. That was the original vision for the web. But because it was missing a few pieces, it kind of got co-opted along the way by a few giants.
Yeah, man, I love that, the dataverse. I think we've heard a lot about the metaverse, and frankly, Meta kind of, I don't know, it took that spark away from, at least for me, and I'm sure for others. And then Web3 is such a, it's such a ambiguous term. It was funny, as we were coming up with this Delphi podcast, we're thinking of names, and somebody mentioned, well, like, what would it tell listeners if we call the podcast, like, what is Web2, right? Like, what does that even mean? Like, the internet? Like, everything? And that's what we're trying to do here, right? We're trying to, like, unpack what are these different pieces. And I think you come from it from a, you know, really interesting angle, that it's, like, this unified data layer or, like, data infrastructure. And obviously Ceramic is a big piece of that. I'm curious, like, what other like data infrastructure components or layers are you keen on?
Yeah, so I do think we're seeing the kind of the emergence of like a Web3 data stack. So I think like the base layer, we're built very heavily on IPFS, and then Filecoin and Arweave give this really powerful long-term storage that Ceramic will use and rely on. And you know, I compared Ceramic earlier to be kind of like this database layer on top of like raw file storage. But one thing that is kind of a really important complement to like Ceramic's write functionality is really powerful querying. The ability to read data across the dataverse, whether that's on a blockchain or on Ceramic or elsewhere. And so the graph and other indexing services are super important to be able to take all this data, which is going to be, instead of like nicely, neatly in a server at an AWS farm in Virginia, in a, you know, the dataverse, like data scattered everywhere, it's decentralized. And that has a whole bunch of implications beyond just physically, it's logically decentralized because you have your data, I have my data. If we're having a conversation in a feed, that needs to be recompiled together for a good application. And so really powerful indexing and querying is important. So the graph is a super important part of the Web3 stack. And then one of the biggest challenges is going to be creating and managing all of this data in a friendly UX that's still secure and lets users make the right decisions and kind of access this data anywhere, but without it being overwhelming. And so the wallet and authentication layer is really important. You know, Ceramic is kind of a layer beneath this with a really powerful identity system that we didn't talk about that much that basically lets you connect any different blockchain wallet and an account on any different blockchain to the same identity. So you have this interoperability that's not fragmented by key. But that requires really great wallets that on all of these different on all of these different blockchains and beyond blockchains too, to manage the signatures and the permissions and the data. So I think, you know, lots of people doing great work on that. The sign in with Ethereum standard is very exciting to start to standardize some things there. We're seeing some more things on other chains. And then there's a bunch of business building services and products that bring all these together to make it much easier for developers to onboard, because we're, you know, it's still early. So compared to building with AWS, it's still hard. So folks like Figment putting together like a hub for developers to come use all of these different pieces in a really easy way, so that the reality, the kind of the theory and the promise of it being so easy to start building an application becomes more of a reality. Because it can be challenging to try to piece together all these different protocols that are very low level if you're a dev that's new to the space. The last one I'll mention is you asked about the privacy on Ceramic. And again, not all data should be stored on an open network. And so there's folks like Textile or Spruce that are building kind of more private data solutions that don't have the same like public state network, but are great for other kinds of data. We work really closely with them.
Nice. There's a whole bunch of alpha there. I've got a full reading list now for this weekend. What's the catch here though? Like this sounds like, you know, it is undeniably, you know, the future. This is inevitable. And I think it is inevitable. But right now we're at it. We're early stages. Like what are the trade-offs right now for, you know, something like Ceramic?
Yeah, it's a good question. There definitely are. The first one's performance. It's not as fast as a server right now. We actually think that there's ways in which it might be in the future. It's not inevitable that a decentralized network, the way that Ceramic is built with like local first writing, needs to be any slower than a centralized network. And it's really fast for certain use cases today, but we're still relatively early and it's optimized for some use cases and not others. And so in addition to the data models that I talked about earlier, where apps can kind of structure their data according to certain schema, Ceramic, the streams, which are actually like the data objects themselves, can be programmed to represent, you know, different types of data and different rules about how data gets managed and changed and conflicts are resolved and stored. And there's two right now on the network. And long term, there can be a huge number more that basically allow for different use cases in much more optimized fashion. So if you're doing like super scaled social application right now, Ceramic's going to have some performance limitations. So that's really the biggest one, is just like targeting the use case to, you know, what Ceramic does quite well. The other thing is Ceramic right now is a peer-to-peer network, which means there's no built-in incentive. There's no built-in guarantee for data availability. So anyone who wants to build on Ceramic today runs their own node. We're working with a bunch of great commercial infrastructure partners who are going to start to offer nodes as a service, so that similar to paying, you know, AWS, you could pay someone else to run a Ceramic node for you. But long term, there will be a blockchain. It will look very different than any existing blockchain because it will be optimized for data rather than for value. And so tons of trade-offs are made very differently to get way more scale and way more speed than you could ever get on a traditional blockchain, because you can forgive certain limitations or that are necessary for financial transactions that you don't have for data transactions. And so that will provide kind of a guaranteed availability for data. But in the meantime, there is still the need to run a node or pay someone else to. And so that kind of developer experience and that full flow to make it feel more like a just use it platform isn't there yet, but it will be soon.
Gotcha. And so, you kind of hinted at like, bringing on like commercial partners who can help, ease the friction in terms of running a node. I'm curious, like, what does the future of Ceramic look like? Maybe let's look like a year out from now, and then also, 5 years out from now.
So a year out from now, I think we will have the, knock on wood, and don't hold me to this, at least not until our CTO blesses it too, but we'll have an early version of the Ceramic blockchain that will start to provide some of the guarantees that the long-term network will. So that's technically, and so what you'll have at that point is the combination of this peer-to-peer network that has scaled much faster and far beyond where we're at today, with hundreds of applications using it to write, manage, and build with decentralized data, and then an early blockchain that's starting to provide guarantees around that data beyond the peer-to-peer system. And we'll also have, right now, most of the development is happening by 3Box Labs. That's going to change very soon. We'll have more development partners, and we'll also have a full development ecosystem that we'll share more about pretty soon. So really giving the community ways to participate in this and start to take ownership of it as well. That's a year from now. I think we'll have kind of a couple of use cases that are like dominating Web3 at that point. I think like reputations will be like, right today, most reputation in Web3 is like you recognize someone's ENS handle, but that's kind of it. I think people start to have really rich reputations of these credentials they've earned, of verifications they have from Web2, maybe imports from Web2. We're starting to see that happen a lot, like bring all your data with you and start to attach it. Talking to lots of people in both NFT and DeFi world about the need for various forms of reputation to do kind of more sophisticated financial transactions, but also DAOs especially need like all kinds of reputation to manage governance. And then, I talked about before, social is taking off. And so and I think we're going to see the start of not just like Twitter clones or things that kind of replicate the like Web 2 in Web 3, what I think of as like the skeuomorphic phase of Web 3, but things that you could only do in Web 3. And I think sharing data across applications, sharing conversations, sharing media, we're going to start to see all of that by the end of the year on Ceramic. And 5 years, like, it's hard to like imagine what will come out in terms of like concrete applications at that point. But I think like if you're a new startup building a new application or product, 5 years from now, you'd be crazy not to use a decentralized stack. That the data ecosystem, both data models and structures to start building on, but also the data you get to use with users bringing it with them, will be so powerful that if you're starting a new company, new business, new product, you're gonna do it on decentralized architecture as opposed to more traditional centralized one.
Awesome. The future is bright with Ceramic in it. I gotta ask, when token, man? When can I ape Ceramic?
We'll check in 2026 and see how that's going.
Yeah.
We don't answer that question, not yet at least.
I had to ask, I know like myself and everybody else listening is probably curious. All right, man. Well, this was a blast. There's a lot of awesome information in here. I learned a bunch, and I'm sure our listeners have too. Please, where can people learn more about ceramic and find yourself in 3Box Labs?
Yeah, so start with ceramic.network. That's our site. There should be a brand new documentation and developer page and experience going up right around the time this launches. So lots of good technical information there. At Ceramic Network on Twitter. If you want to learn more about the company, we are, of course, hiring across the board and some roles that are super exciting and impactful. So we're at 3Box Labs on Twitter, 3boxlabs.com. And if you want to reach out to me, I'm at DAZUCK at the Zuck on Twitter is usually the best place. But if you want to come say hi and hang out, chat.ceramic.network. That's our Discord community. We do all of our work in there, build in public. Community's incredible and building at a pace I can't keep up with. And our core devs are in there all the time too. So especially if you want to start hacking on something or building with ceramic, chat.ceramic.network.
Sweet. Well, Danny, this was a pleasure. I appreciate you hopping on, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot, Avi. It was a blast.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Delphi podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on your podcast app, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter or LinkedIn. Stay tuned for our next episode, out soon.